This is Tim McNally. Welcome to the Dine, Wine, and Spirits Show, NOLA Drinks Edition. Here's your host, Brian Diaz.
All right, everybody. Welcome to the NOLA Drinks Edition of the Dine, Wine, and Spirits Show. This is Brian Diaz, your host. Happy Thursday, everybody. Happy welcome to the unofficial start of the weekend. Yeah, that's what we like to say here. Actually, friends, my weekend kind of started last night there on Wednesday. We'll get into that at the end of the show. But yeah, hey, we're kicking off the weekend here on our late Thursday afternoon broadcast of the NOLA Drink Show. And again, very happy to be here with you. Got a good show lined up for you today. Hopefully a bit of a thought-provoking one, at least at times. A little bit later on in the show, I will be joined by Sam Perez, Royale Baugh, and Johnny Sanders, all three terrific professional bartenders in town, all three members of the LGBTQ community, and we'll be talking about issues that folks in that community face working in the service industry and more particularly behind the bar. Very happy to discuss that. If you caught the show back, maybe 5-6 weeks ago, we had three female bartenders on, tremendous professionals in their own right. Sam Perry of Cane and Table, now in Chicago. I might add Katie Dubois of Barrel Proof and Adrian Miller of Bar Tonique and Toops Meadery. And we were talking about gender issues behind the bar and some of the barriers that women face tending bar. And I think when you hear this conversation with Sam Perez, Royale Baugh, and Johnny Sanders, you'll find that there perhaps are some parallels, but then there are a great deal of differences. And I think it's an important topic to talk about because it's one that I think that's not talked about too often. And these three individuals, and again, wonderful bartenders, wonderful people, are very thoughtful and have a lot to say on the issue. So hopefully you'll find that segments, entertaining. And then we'll continue on with them at the end of the show, just kind of have a little bit of fun, talk about some of the differences in what they actually like to drink. And everybody, I'm always interested to hear what some of my bartender friends like to say when it's on their dime, if you will, or on their hour of not working, when it's their free time, it's their choice what they're putting in their glass. So that should be pretty fun. So check that out. We've got some other stuff coming up for you. Also, I wanted to mention a few things, as we always like to do here at the start of the show, as far as what's going on around town. Starting last night, if you are not aware, Luna Fett kicked off. This is by the Arts Council of New Orleans. This is a really neat event, friends. It's a coined as a festival that celebrates art through light and technology, and it is an amazing light show that goes on. It is now back at Gallier Hall, right there at Lafayette Square. Last year, because of the renovations at Gallier Hall to the exterior, they were projecting the stuff over on a side of a wall on Aretha Castle Haley in that area, and now they've moved back to Gallier Hall. And if you don't know, it's this incredible light show that goes on that's projected on the facade of Gallier Hall. Really absolutely beautiful stuff. It's set to music. There's some sort of live action stuff and animation that's all integrated in this incredible multimedia experience. The event is an annual event. And it's over there by Lafayette Square, 545 St. Charles Avenue. It started last night and it goes on just through Saturday, friends, from 6 to 9 p.m. I think it's generally each show is about 15 minutes and they take about 15 minutes and then they come back and do it on a regular rotation, and it's a really neat thing. And the company that actually puts on or has the technology to do all this architectural animation, it's called, the name of the company is La Maison Production, and they are a company out of France, and they do some really, really amazing work, friends. It's really worth seeing. That's not the only thing. So you have the projections, of course, going on at Gallier Hall, as I mentioned. There is an art market right there in Lafayette Square, which is always fun. Lots of local artists out there. There tends to be, in recent years anyway, activities for the kids to do some things. This year, there's also going to be a 30-foot Titan the Bison. Yes, a lighted aluminum buffalo or bison by an artist called Brennan Steele. And he's done some stuff, a 35-foot geometric Christmas tree bonfire that was in Algiers Point last year. And he also did the huge burning Chewbacca's effigy there at Mardi Gras in 2015. So that's going on. And that'll be out there. A 30-foot lighted aluminum buffalo or bison, Titan the Bison. Watch for that. Billy Spheres over there on Fulton Street. Visitors will find something called Billy Spheres, which are light sensitive orbs. This is a great thing for the kids that I was talking about that can be drawn on with smartphones and flashlights. That's a lot of fun. That'll be neat. And then also as part of this, I guess this kicked off on Tuesday, a laser rainbow. Lafayette Street intersects where Lafayette Street intersects with Fulton Street. Harris Casino sponsoring a quote monumental multicolored laser light projection titled Global Rainbow. And this is actually created by a Berlin-based American artist named Yvette Matern. And it's supposedly visible. I haven't seen it yet from 35 miles away. So all of that is part of the LunaFet Festival. Part of the LunaFet Festival that they've been talking about, too, is that they are looking to continue to expand the scale and scope of the event until we celebrate the tricentennial of New Orleans in 2018. So I think look for more things that continue to go on. Again, it's the Arts Council New Orleans that puts this on. And I didn't realize this. Luna is the word in Spanish for the moon, and fete, you know, fete being, of course, we all know that in French, party festival. And in this case, but Luna also stands up for Light Up NOLA Arts. I learned something new here today, friends. So that's very cool. It's a really neat event. Again, started last night, kicks off at 6 o'clock tonight till 9 p.m. Same on Friday, same on Saturday. Bring the family. It's absolutely worth it. I'm sure there's going to be food vendors out there and all of that other good stuff. Want to point out a tasting going on tomorrow night, also tasting really kind of going on tonight. Our good friends over there at Pearl Wine Company at 3700 Orleans Avenue at the American Can Building. They are putting on their usual Thursday night tasting, which starts right here at the close of the show. 5 o'clock goes till 7 o'clock, complimentary tasting. You have the Crescent City Farmers Market out there in the parking lot. There's usually a food truck. Lots of fun. I don't actually know what the tasting this evening is about, but tomorrow a very special tasting that they're doing. So they do the free tastings Thursday and Friday from 5 to 7. And the one tomorrow night is actually featuring the High West whiskey brand. So they're going to be pouring some of the various products that High West Distillery makes. They're, interestingly enough, out of Park City, Utah. They've been around since about 2009, I believe, somewhere around there, you know, six, seven years. And they make some really fantabulous whiskeys, friends. They do a great rye, some nice bourbons, I think more than one rye, actually. So get out there to Pearl Wine Company, check that out. The tastings there will be fun. I know on Friday nights they also have live music at about 8 o'clock that goes on after the tasting is over. So 5 to 7, Pearl Wine Company, 3700 Orleans Avenue, High West Distillery. That ought to be pretty good, I think. And whatever they're tasting is tonight, it's always pretty good over there, of course, at Pearl Wine Company. So go check them out tonight, friends. Actually, starting also more or less right after the show here is over, is Tales of the Toddy. And this event is put on by Tales of the Cocktail. And it is a sort of a cocktail showcase competition, I believe, where, you know, duos of bartenders from in the New Orleans area pair up together and they create a version of the toddy. Most of the time they're hot, sometimes they're not. It is that season, friends. Of course, we're here in the wintertime, and they pair up and they make a beverage and some sort of spin. The term toddy, you know, it's taken pretty liberally about what you can use. So people are incredibly creative. Lots of times the bartenders in question will dress up in costumes that reflect, say they're representing a Mexican theme or some ethnic theme or something like that. They'll wear costumes that showcase what it is that they're doing and what their drink is all about. That event is at the Hyatt Regency New Orleans this evening. The early bird thing, which you sort of get early VIP access, starts at 5:30. That goes till 6:30. And then the general admission portion of the event from 6:30 to 9. That's at 601 Loyola Avenue. That is a lot of fun. If you purchase the tickets, you can do so on Eventbrite, and I don't know if they end a little bit early because, you know, they might just do them at the door. But in advance for the VIP package or early entry package there at 5:30, that works out to be about $84 with the service fee. And then if you do just the regular general admission, that works out to be about $53, $54. So go check out Tales of the Toddy 2016 on Eventbrite. You can also find the link, of course. It's talesofthecocktail.com. That's a lot of fun. I always recommend this event. Lots of great Yuletide cocktails, as we'll say. So there's nogs, toddies, and all kinds of other drinks. You know, when we're talking about some pretty good proof in the beverages there, a little bit of a high ABV. Lots of times these drinks have a lot of sugar, so you need to kind of be careful, pace yourself. There's a lot of drink to be had. Of course, there'll be some entertainment and all that good stuff as well. But I guess where I'm going with this, folks, is, you know, be careful if you go to that event. Maybe arrange for a designated driver. Think about taking take an Uber, think about taking a cab. If you live somewhere around the area, again, 601 Loyola Avenue by the Hyatt Regency New Orleans there in the Celestine Ballroom. If you're kind of close to there, maybe think about walking. That's not a bad idea. Just put on a jacket. We're not expecting rain this evening or anything like that. The weather looks like it's going to be pretty, pretty good. So check that out. Tales of the Toddy again, talesofthecocktail.com. Folks, thanks for tuning in here to the NOLA Drink Show on WGSO 990 AM New Orleans. This is Brian Diaz. Thanks again. Happy to be here with you. A little bit more coming up here after the break, and then we're going to get into even more after that, folks. So, hey, come on back to the show.
Hi, I'm Dickie Brennan, and I'd like to invite you to our new Black Duck Bar located on the second floor of Palace Cafe. Rum is the chosen spirit of Palace Cafe's Black Duck Bar and features an extensive rum collection from all over the world. Be sure to join us for happy hour Monday through Friday, 4 to 6 p.m., with half-price small plates, local draft beer, and tap wine. Look forward to seeing you soon at Palace Cafe's new Black Duck Bar.
Are you tired of drinking the same wines? Switch it up. Try the Kreutz Family Cellars wine. Kreutz Family Cellars is a small, family-owned winery in Sonoma County that makes wines from some of the most prized vineyards throughout Northern California. Each bottle of Kreutz Family Cellars wines has a magnolia on the label. The magnolia is a symbol of the family's southern roots and their way of life. True, honest, and fun. Look for the magnolia and pick up a bottle of Kreutz Family Cellars wines today.
Hi, New Orleans. It's Laura from Sobu, and I'm here with Chef Juan Carlos.
Sobu's got happier hour. It's 3 to 6 from 3 to 6.
It's bar bars, sips, and snacks, all for $3 to $6 from 3 to 6 p.m. every day.
Laura's got something to please everyone at the bar for happier hour, all for 3 to 6 here at Sobu.
And we know you'll want to try a smoky pulled pork taco or any of the other delicious snacks on our happier hour menu.
Sobu's happier hour every day from 3 to 6, 310 Charter Street in the quarter.
Complimentary parking next door at the W Hotel.
All right, everybody. Welcome back to the NOLA Drink Show here on WGSO 990 AM in New Orleans. Brian Diaz, your host here with you today. Happy to be here. A little chilly on a Thursday. That's kind of a cold wind out there going on. But hey, I think it's going to get even colder tomorrow from what I understand. We're definitely pretty far into that jacket weather now, I think. I know how we all get very excited here when the weather starts to turn and I see people, you know, going back 2-3 weeks when it's still in the 70s, folks, and people are walking around with scarves on. I don't quite get that. You just want it to be cold so badly. But now it's really kind of here, I think. So get those scarves out if you haven't, and get those gloves and those jackets and stuff. And that sounds like tomorrow on Friday, we are going to need it. Folks, a little bit of news here and there in the world of beverage that I wanted to get to. One of the topics that we like to talk about here on the show is agave production, which is, of course, the agave plant, which is responsible what's used in making tequila and mezcal. In fact, if you're interested in mezcal, one of my favorite interviews that we played again on the Thanksgiving show last week on the podcast, anyway, we went back and played the interview with Nick Dietrich of Cannon Table and Braden Legrone of Cure. Braden's moved his way down to Mexico to be closer to agave, but we talk about agave production in the traditional ways of life and some of these things connected to it. And it's an interesting show. So if you go back to last week's podcast, you can find that on iTunes, Google Play Music, TuneIn Radio, and on our website, noladrinks.com. There's three or so segments of us talking about agave. You can learn quite a bit about mezcal and agave production. In the case of tequila, friends, so essentially tequila is part of the larger mezcal family. And as I mentioned, these are made from agave. In tequila, in the region itself, where tequila has to be made to be called tequila, they also have to use only the blue agave. In the case of mezcal, other agave agaves can actually be used. There's 40 or 50 or so that are kind of the main ones, even smaller number than the main ones, but about 40 or 50 that are generally in play from my understanding, but just blue agave for tequila. And kind of what's going on is there's a shortage happening now, and this market for agave swings back and forth very quickly. Now, when we're talking mostly here about craft tequila or smaller distillers using 100% blue agave, a lot of the bigger brands, the really famous stuff, like a lot of the Cuervos, I guess, of the world, and some of these people are actually called mixtos, M-I-X-T-O, mixtos, and those are mixed, and so they're actually using other agaves as well as blue agave. But in the case of blue agave, so the agave plant takes several years, in most cases 7 to 9 years to mature. So what can happen is that it's very, very difficult, obviously, for growers and producers to anticipate what the market's going to look like for tequila 8 years down the road. And so there's this kind of ongoing cycle of, you know, there's a shortage of agave, the prices rise, people plant massively to take advantage of the valuable cash crop. Then there's an oversupply, as you can imagine, and then their prices fall. And that kind of stunts planting. Then we get back to the shortage and so on and so forth. So an article in the Drinks Business recently talking about this, that there's a little some quotes where a guy who wrote the article was talking to some producers in early 2015, which was when it kind of bottomed out again. It said the price of agave is so cheap that unless we need some for distillation, it's cheaper to let it rot in the fields than collect it and cook it. And then the guy goes on in October 2016, so very recently, the price of agave is going up weekly, and I'm almost ashamed to be a tequilero, a producer of tequila, and given what is happening to prices, blah, blah, blah. And then in 2002, this is in November 2016, this quote, referring back to 2002, when the last time agave prices skyrocketed, it went from 40 centavos to 14 Mexican pesos per year. And I don't have the exchange rate in front of me, but you can imagine essentially, you know, 40 cents to 14 pesos. And that's obviously a huge increase in over 2 years' time. At this point, folks, we're back up to about 11.4 pesos per kilo. And that's gone up in just the past 10 months. That rise has taken place radically. And they're talking about the price easily getting to about 20 pesos per kilo or possibly even higher. So we're kind of, it's just this constant boom and bust. Lots of other things can happen, as you might imagine, where these smaller brands might disappear, which is probably good news for the big guys, bad news for those of us that like better made tequila. There's also a new player in the game. People are making miel de agave, and that's honey. They're basically making honey from it. And I guess it's a little bit lower in sugar and some other things than regular honey. So it's kind of popular as a healthier substitute and these sorts of things. And they're buying a lot of blue agave. Now they're using some of the other ones, but that's also one of the preferred ones. So that whole new little wrinkle is putting a serious pinch on that. What I think is going to happen again is that we're probably going to see some of these smaller brands of tequila, unfortunately, disappearing. And, you know, where they don't, the prices are going to go up quite a bit. You know, that's an unfortunate thing. People are talking, one of these craft producers here was talking about having to raise their price about 14%, which is, of course, substantial. So hopefully this straightens out. But it is a very difficult cycle of peaks and troughs. And we are certainly in the end of that right now, where there is a shortage and prices are going up. Also, talking about something else, well, there's sort of bad news, I guess, if we want to call it that. We're talking about the world of cider. And I love cider, folks. I don't know about you. Of course, it's made from apples. It's a little bit more popular in Europe than it is here in the United States. But it's surprisingly, it's got a very small part of the market. I mean, it's a sliver of the market right now. And this is also in the drinks business. And it actually, they declined, sales of cider declined by another 6% this year. So as the article says, that it's hard to, it maybe defies physics that you can have such a small sliver of the market and it can still actually shrink. And part of what this article argues is that we've seen this a lot in distillates, where with cider, that people, there was a sort of rush to get on the bandwagon. And even in 2015, you had big brands like Diageo getting involved in cider production. Stella Artois with their Stella Sidra came out, and all these other ones. But a lot of what people were doing, which, like, we see this with vodka, they were doing these sort of novel flavors like blood orange and black cherry and some of these things. And the argument here made in this article in the drinks business, again, is that, you know, got to get away from the novelty thing. You go out and maybe you try that blood orange cider because you think it sounds like it's kind of interesting, but then do you really go back and want to try it again or have it again? Is it something that you regularly go to? And so the article goes on to mention that really probably what needs to happen is getting back to the roots of what cider is. It's a very honest beverage, again, made from apples, of course, as we noted, and tell a real story is what this person is arguing in their piece. And, you know, get maybe invest a little bit more in the packaging, which we know kind of matters. And they make some of the parallels to the craft beer industry, of course, which has done incredibly well. And, you know, so take some of these lessons from there, where nice packaging, good story, well-made product, get away from some of the novelty aspects. aspects of it and really embrace it for what it is. And it's a great, especially this time of year, it's a great, I think it's a great beverage. So there's a huge potential out there for it. And I do tend to agree to a large degree anyway, I tend to believe what this article says is true, is that getting back to, again, sort of a more honest kind of product, embrace the well-made product, use quality apples, quality production, quality packaging, and really try and get that cider back out there. I think that makes quite a bit of sense to me. So, hey, you know, check out cider if you like it. If you never had it, I recommend giving it a try. It's pretty good. So, folks, when we come back to the show here, as I mentioned, we're going to have a very interesting discussion. It's part of our What's in Your Glass, What's in Your Bottle segment that we like to do here on the NOLA Drinks Show. And that's where we talk about social issues. Again, we talked about agave here a little bit in the show that I was mentioning before. We talked about some of the economic, political, social threats to agave production in Mexico. That's another example of this segment. And in this case, we're talking to three friends of mine who are members of the LGBTQ community here in New Orleans. All three are fantabulous bartenders. And we're going to talk a little bit about some of the things, challenges that they face, some of their thoughts about working as a bartender, and then also being a part of that community and how that all comes together and what does that mean for them. So it'll be a very interesting, it's a very interesting interview. We actually recorded this interview on Tuesday at Bar Tonique. I found it very fascinating to talk to these three very thoughtful professionals about what some of their experiences are. I hope you find it also very thought-provoking and interesting as well. So we are going to take another bottom of the hour. We're going to take our bottom of the hour break, I should say, here on the NOLA Drinks Show, take care of a little business, and then we're going to come back with that interview with those three. And then at the end of the interview, when we talk serious stuff for four segments or so, we do have a little bit of fun. We talk a little bit about what they like to drink and some of these things and what they like to put in their glass. And then after that, we'll close out the show. So folks, stay tuned here on the NOLA Drinks Show, WGSO 990 AM New Orleans. Come on back.
The French Market offers daily entertainment and delicious food and drink options throughout our six-block district. Whether you crave raw oysters or fresh produce, authentic confections or healthy daiquiris, you can find it here. Sit at one of our cafes and hear live local music. Enjoy a muffaletta, po'boy, salad, or cheese plate in the farmer's market. Check out our pop-up farmer's markets on Wednesdays and Saturdays for even more fresh food options. History is being made fresh daily at the French Market. Visit frenchmarket.org for food, drink, retail, and event listings.
Are you looking for the best buns? Well, we have them at Bayou Burger in the Quarter. Wait till you bite into one of our acclaimed burgers like the Cowboy Burger, Tiebreaker Shrimp Burger, the world-famous Gator Burger, or you can build your own with endless combinations. It's all fresh meat, never ever frozen. Everywhere you look, there's big screen TVs where you'll never miss a minute of the action. Boasting the largest balcony dining in the French Quarter, you can watch all the action pass you by on the street. Find the best burgers in action at Bayou Burger. 501 Bourbon at St. Louis for the best buns on bourbon. It's Bayou Burger, baby.
With the season's beautiful weather, it's a perfect time to take a drive across Lake Pontchartrain and visit New Orleans' only local vineyard and winery, Pontchartrain Vineyards. Our tasting room is open Wednesday through Sunday from noon till 4, or by appointment. Come enjoy a flight of our wines in our classically styled French Provençal tasting room, or pack a picnic lunch and enjoy a bottle of wine on our patio overlooking the vineyard. While you're there, ask about our wine club. For more information, go to PontchartrainVineyards.com.
Hey, New Orleans, Jack Jelenko here, local wine guy. If you're listening to this show, you love good food and good wine. And a great wine with our plentiful fresh Gulf seafood is the Domaine St. Rose Coquille Blanc, a crisp, balanced white blend from the south of France. Whether it's with fresh oysters, crab, redfish, or shrimp, this Domaine St. Rose Coquille Blanc will not disappoint. And it's a great value at around $14. Domaine St. Rose Coquille Blanc. Cheers.
Looking to shake things up or find the bartender in you? We mean literally. At the New Orleans Drink Lab, you'll do just that. We teach you the history and tradition of classic New Orleans cocktails. Then you get behind the bar and make them. Master classes are fun, interactive, and hands-on. Great for small groups and team building. Come enjoy the ultimate cocktail experience. You mix, muddle, and master the art of cocktail making. Visit us at 343 Barone Street or go to our website. drinklabnola.com.
Hi, this is Kevin Richards with Sazerac Rye Whiskey. In 2008, the Louisiana legislature made the Sazerac cocktail the official cocktail of New Orleans, affirming what New Orleanians had known for over 150 years. You just can't beat a good Sazerac. The Sazerac cocktail is the quintessential New Orleans drink, perfect for celebrating the arrival of fall festivals, football season, or just being proud to be a New Orleanian. For the official recipe, visit www.sazerac.com.
This is Christopher Icaza, General Manager of Broussard's Restaurant, 819 Conti Street in the beautiful Vaucaray. We encourage you to come join us this fall and experience the renovation of one of the French Quarter's Grand Dames. Join us in our beautifully renovated Napoleon Dining Room. Come see our friend Paul Gustings at the beautiful Empire Bar. Experience one of the French Quarter's loveliest courtyards. That's Broussard's Restaurant, 819 Conti Street. Open 7 nights a week and every Sunday for brunch.
Hello, this is Ron Bartholomew, and to my great city of New Orleans, I'd like to introduce to you Touch Vodka. This artisan handcrafted ultra-premium vodka is uniquely distilled from Florida's finest wildflower honey and American grain. Touch also produces key lime, Valencia orange, and ruby red grapefruit selections that are infused with natural oils of locally sourced fruit, which results in a unique 80-proof vodka with no sugar added or coloring. Touch is now available at Doranax, Cello's, and the Corporation Grill and Bar, and many other locations across Louisiana. This holiday season, sit back and relax and enjoy Touch Vodka.
All right, everybody. Welcome back to the NOLA Drink Show. This is Brian Diaz, and I am your host here on WGSO 990 AM New Orleans. And we are here on Rampart Street at Bar Tonique. And actually, we're doing this here on bright and early on a Tuesday morning. Well, not really bright and early, but on a Tuesday morning. So thanks to Bar Tonique here for hosting. And I'm pleased to be joined by three friends. Sam Perez from Catahoula Hotel.
Hello. Thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you. Thank you. Royale Ba from Seaworthy over there by the Ace Hotel.
Yeah. Thank you.
Absolutely. Good to see you. And Johnny Sanders right here from Bar Tonique.
Hello.
Hey, Johnny. How's it going? It's going great, man. It's good to see you. We were talking about before the show. I haven't seen you in a long time.
So. Yeah. I haven't worked any morning shifts. I think that's your usual time to stop by.
Yeah. Well, yeah. It's if you're working the late night shift, I'm not going to be around. I mean, you see me at noon when y'all open up on a Tuesday, like today.
Picking your battles.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Sleep and age; those are the two battles. Well, yeah. So, thanks for hosting, Johnny. I appreciate it. We're happy to be here at Bar Tonique, and this is a segment that we call "What's in Your Glass, What's in Your Bottle." And as you know, if you've listened to the show or the podcast before, we talk about social issues, sometimes environmental issues, economic, political issues connected to the world of drink and food. And in this case, what we're talking about today is we're talking about issues connected to the LGBTQ community and how it relates to the service industry and the bartending industry here in New Orleans and beyond. If you listen to the show, which you can find this podcast a few weeks back, we had on three female bartenders, and we were talking about gender issues behind the bar, and this is, I think, a similar conversation in some ways and quite different in others. So thank you all for being here today to talk about this. We were talking about right before we went on the air here, maybe one of the differences, and we were talking when we had the segment on with female bartenders, straight female bartenders, a lot of what we discussed was how people were treated behind the bar. That had a lot to do with the idea where sometimes, you know, if you're a female bartender, you were being treated, how could you possibly know about the 200 whiskeys that your bar has? Or how do you know how to make this drink? You know, or the other one being, you know, what are you doing with your life? Like, are you doing this to work your way through school? Not that you were a professional. Maybe taking some of those issues, do you all find that that's some of the case? Do you think you get treated strictly from a professional level in a diminished fashion in that way by any stretch?
Here and there, yes. I mean, the whiskey thing happened to me last night.
Okay.
Yeah, I had a guy come up and be like, oh, I'm looking for a rye. And I handed him a rye, and he's like, no, a bourbon rye. And I'm like, do you mean a high rye mash bill? And he's like, no, no, a rye. And I'm like, okay, here you go. Just drink this. But, yeah, I mean, I guess it's kind of different because, I mean, also perceived, presented as female. So it kind of ties into that as well. But I think as a queer person, I'm not sure if there's any separation between those two things.
Okay. Yeah.
In that regard, at least. Okay. But I haven't really thought about it a lot either.
Okay. We have some time during the show here, so reflect. Royale, what about you? What about you?
I think more so than being treated like you're not capable,
I see a lot of queer people being treated like tokens. You know, it's not necessarily that people don't believe in your ability to perform well. It's just that's not why they recruited you. Often you're treated more as a part of the aesthetic than you are a part of, you know, the team for your skills.
Okay, so from a hiring practice standpoint, more of like what you said, yeah. a token or like an affirmative action type quota yeah, consideration.
Exactly. Okay. And I think I've been lucky in that most of the places that I work in New Orleans, that hasn't really been the case, but a lot of my experiences in working in other places, in restaurants, and just generally in hiring practices, people tend to only hire queer people, or at least visibly queer people, for, yeah, affirmative action reasons, or in order to, you know, like, not be perceived as a bigoted, homophobic corporation.
Right, right.
Which a lot
we
of
got
times,
one, see? We got
yeah,
one.
Exactly.
Right. Well, Johnny, what are your thoughts?
I agree with both sentiments, and I am glad that Sam spoke first, because I think this issue would probably more directly affect her. Going back to presentation in society, I think I present more as like a sort of cisgendered male that may or may not be gay. So most guys sort of assume things about me that are more professional than I actually am. Because I've only been bartending in the craft cocktail world for about a year now, and I've been in dive bars for a long time. Mm-hmm. And I don't really seem like a gay male when you first meet me, I guess, to some guys, and they also assume that I know a lot more about cocktails than I actually do, and I'll learn things from them or just be able to suss out their own ignorance and their own bigotry within what they're talking about, and I can just sort of like dismiss it. I guess I'm pretty privileged in that way, in like that sort of sense of what we're talking about. But
do you find, Johnny, that like say when you were working at dive bars, did you find it necessary or helpful to not be quite as obvious to people, do you think, or?
No, I've the bar I was at before this for about a year was the Always Lounge, and you can be as queer as you want to be. You can be whoever you want to be.
Always.
Always. Exactly. So I've not been in that many places where I had to present any sort of way. I think in the service industry in New Orleans, there's actually a lot of queer people working. It's like we are a big force in the service industry in the South, mm-hmm. and especially in New Orleans. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think it's a very accessible job for people like us.
And especially here in New Orleans, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah,
I think we're totally kind of dealing with an oasis yeah. situation.
Lesser so in the cocktail world, though.
Yeah, absolutely. You're very right.
There's,
yeah.
They're in like the craft scene and the cocktail scene and like high fine dining kind of stuff. There's definitely less prevalence of queer people working there, at least in the forefront, like in front of house.
In front of house.
It's definitely a huge prevalence in back of house always. But and I was talking to someone about this last night, actually. I see that as a bit of an issue as well.
Okay.
Because it seems like something that's a little harder to break into for queer people, even if they are like interested and show a desire to get into that.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Well, and so I think there is, even here in New Orleans, of course, in some of the more traditional, if you want to call them that, or old school places, that still is that's your old white guy lifer, server, bartender, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, more often than not, yeah. I think that's a lot of the culture.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny, actually, I was talking with a coworker this morning, and we were saying, and this is another person of color who happens to not be queer, that the bartending scene is a bit of a fraternity, and so you tend to see that play out in a lot of different ways, including race and gender, and also, you know, whether or not you're gender nonconforming or, you know, straight. A lot of people tend to kind of group together, you know, like,
within the operation,
whatever, okay. How you identify, you tend to see people kind of, you know, form little groups. It's a little clicky at times.
Okay, right. And then that defines some of the outside of work social existence then, in a large way.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. People tend to just like hang out with whoever they would normally hang out with in their own bubbles, in like
the real world. You know, like
behind the scenes,
the
if you
world
will. You know,
world.
Like behind the veil of service, and you know, like who you have to be at work. You know, like whatever that is. You know, because at least I find with race, that's also a thing with tokening and presenting a certain person behind the bar to people because people want to be sold on an image and an idea of who people are. I think in the higher end restaurant scene, you know, like at the Always Lounge, you can be whoever you want. You cannot take a shower for a week if no one cares, and that's cool about it, you know, but like
within reason, right?
I mean, as long as it's not on my face, you can
do whatever you want. There is something to be said about that, though, like in the bartending. I think like some cities take it even further. I think the New Orleans, I've been to bars in Brooklyn where everyone sort of has the bow tie and that same sort of coiffed haircut, and it's like, like everyone has this same image, which is, I think, a very like Eurocentric image, and it sort of like prevents outside personalities or people from even entering that space in the first place.
Let's hold that thought, Johnny. We got to take a quick break here on the show, and let's come back to that. And I also want to come back come back to the issue of color as well, of race. Folks, come on back here to the NOLA Drink Show on WGSO 990 AM New Orleans.
Hey, ladies. Are you looking for wine to bring to your next girls' night out? Grab a bottle of Capitello Wines and enjoy the taste of fruit from Oregon's Willamette Valley. Capitello has a wide variety of wines to choose from. Sauvignon Blanc, Pinot Noir, dessert wine, and a Brut Sparkling that's a blend of Pinot Noir and Chardonnay. He'll even stop by next time he's in town. So grab the girls, have fun, and enjoy Capitello Wine. Cheers.
The Black Duck Bar is now open on the second floor of Dickie Brennan's Palace Cafe. Named in honor of the famous Black Duck Rum Runner, the bar features an extensive rum collection. Also noted for its small plates and charcuterie, the Black Duck Bar is sure to please. Join us for happy hour 4 to 6 p.m. Monday through Friday and try half-price draft beer, wine on tap, or a small plate. Stop by Palace Cafe at 605 Canal Street and try a delicious rum cocktail at the new Black Duck Bar.
Hi, this is Jeff Craner with the award-winning Nottingham Cellars, located in Livermore Valley, California's oldest wine-growing region. Producers of fine wines. Try our clean, crisp 1846 Chardonnay, an ideal pairing with New Orleans seafood. Or our bold, rich Petit Sirah, excellent with steak. To our flagship Bordeaux-style blend, Supremacy. You can find our wines in finer restaurants throughout New Orleans. Hope you enjoy our wines.
All right, everybody. Welcome back to the NOLA Drink Show here on WGSO 990 AM New Orleans. Brian Diaz here with you. Hey, from a Tuesday morning here on Rampart Street, Bar Tonique. And pleased to be joined by Sam, Royale, and Johnny. And we were talking about issues connected to the LGBTQ community and in the service industry and in the bar industry. And actually, you guys, before we go back to the topic of what you were talking about, Johnny, before the break of sort of a cookie cutter image that we find, tell us a little bit, just, you know, briefly, where are you from and where'd you grow up and how'd you get into the bartending world?
Well, I'm from New Orleans. I was born in the Holly Grove area. I've lived all over New Orleans, though. I've been working in the service industry since I was about 18 years old, mostly as a server, and I finally sort of made a leap to bartending because I literally could not take serving food to people anymore, and I will never go back to that, so here I am. And I love bartending. I still find that because I've worked in service industry so long, I'm very good at relating to people, and it feels really nice to be able to work in an environment where I'm actually getting paid pretty well to show people a good time and sort of relate to people that I don't know. It keeps me more social than I would be otherwise.
Okay, yeah.
So yeah, that's kind of how I got to where I am today.
Cool, and you said you've been at Tonique for about a year, right?
Yeah.
You just got back from France, didn't you?
Yeah, that was fun.
Lucky you. Lucky you.
No, it was my second time, and I hated it the first time I went, but I had a really great time this time.
Cool,
yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Well, Royale, what about you? Where are you? Well, I know where you're from, but tell everybody who's listening where you're from.
Yeah, I'm from Riverside, California, Southern California. I got into working in restaurants when I was living in Portland, Oregon, after I had moved up to the Northwest when I was 18. I was working in this place that was kind of like a kitchen and bar and coffee shop and like indoor playground rolled all into one. So it was kind of like, you know, like it was kind of like the base for like a romantic comedy, you know, like, you, or like a children's movie for adults. I became the kitchen supervisor there, and that it came with managing the beer and wine inventory, you know, and dealing with sales for parties and things like that. So it was kind of my first experience with, you know, like alcohol sales. And then when I moved to New Orleans a couple years later, I transitioned into apprenticing at a bar over in Lee Circle. I was working at Tivoli and Lee for a moment. And, you know, that's kind of where I broke into the scene and met a couple of other, you know, people working in cocktail bars here, and kind of had the luck of, you know, moving from one place to another with some really cool people willing to teach me bits and pieces. And I don't know, I just kind of fell in love with it. I also hated serving food. But also,
me too.
But you know, also I like working in restaurants. I like being around food. I just don't like happen to like working that particular role in a restaurant. It's not for my personality type. My physical skills don't match the dexterity, you know, I think that is necessary for that. So I tend to appreciate, you know, the dynamic of interacting with guests from behind the bar as opposed to being out and on the floor.
And just kind of parachuting in and seeing how,
Yeah.
You have more control, like you can kind of do, you're like a puppeteer.
Yeah.
Sorry. Totally. That's right. Yeah. I talk with my hands, so I'm talking far away.
You're getting from the
spread out, move down the bar a little bit. If
you were about to go Coco the gorilla on us there for a second. Yeah. Talking with us. We were just watching a video of Coco the gorilla during the break, sign languaging. Sign languaging. I think that's not a verb.
Signing.
Thank you. About the need to protect our environment. Anyway, but not to get too far off track. Sam, what about you? Where are you from, and how did you end up doing what you're doing?
I'm from down a road.
Down the road.
Yeah, I'm from out in the parish. Grew up in Slidell though, and I got into the service industry just to pay my way through college. It turns out, however, that I hate college, but I love alcohol. So
Did you drop out?
What?
Did you drop out?
I so dropped out. Yes.
So what do you really do? Like, are you saving up to go to college or something?
Totally.
So that's not that question we were talking about at the beginning. It's a non-factor.
Non-factor.
You're not actually working to work your way through school. Okay.
No, I'm perpetually working my way through school.
Although sometimes it's fun to tell people that.
Oh yeah, totally. I'm going to school for underwater basket weaving, actually. Sometimes I tell people really weird stuff. I didn't think I wanted to bartend, actually, until I moved up to New York and I got a job at a bar that I had no business working in whatsoever. And ironically, hearkening back to the point that Royale made about tokens, I was only hired because the GM wanted to hire a lesbian.
How did you find that out?
One of the managers told me a couple months later.
One of the other managers.
Yeah, one of the other managers, yeah. Uh-huh. I mean, granted, the GM was also a lesbian, so I mean, who knows? Okay. Who knows her motives? I thought I wanted to do woodworking, and I moved up to New York to do that. Was working in this bar to kind of support myself, and realized that I hated doing the woodworking stuff for other people, but I loved bartending, and so I did that. And here I am about a year and a half later now. Yeah.
And you're at Catahoula Hotel?
Catahoula and Ace Hotel Lobby Bar.
Yeah. Oh, I didn't know you were working at Ace, too. Oh,
yeah.
Okay. Excellent. Yeah. Excellent. Great. Well, so Johnny, and thank you all for sharing your backgrounds. You got on this topic before the previous break about the sort of, maybe in the larger bartending world and service industry, and especially in certain segments, this cookie cutter image. And I mean, especially lately, I'll say this, that, you know, we see a lot of these pictures. It's sort of like the white guy hipster with the bow tie and the facial hair and the
tattoos.
Vest. Yeah, right. And so, I mean, I guess maybe reactions from you all about that. And obviously, we're talking about different set of circumstances for the three of you. And, you know, I should probably say this. We are doing radio. I always forget this.
Yeah.
So, you know, we have, do you have a Hispanic background, Sam?
Yes.
So, I mean, we have also, aside from being part of the LGBTQ community, you're all people of color.
Yes. Yeah.
And I think that that plays into this, too.
Totally.
But, I mean, what are some reactions to that as far, I mean, do you find that, has that ever created a barrier for you specifically?
I think it actually does, and I try really hard not to let it create a barrier, but image is very important, and I think that both sides of the fence can be, you know, guilty of this. I'm not saying that this is only an occurrence that happens in sort of the craft cocktail world, but I mean, even in gay bars, there's like pictures of really buff dudes working behind the bars, and there's that kind of thing. But going back to craft cocktails, I think that it was sort of a world I didn't really even think about joining, because it sort of seemed like something I wasn't really supposed to be a part of.
Just based on image alone. Fraternity thing that
yeah,
you
totally.
All that kind of consideration. Okay.
Like that bar in Brooklyn, I mean, everyone's wearing bow ties and fancy hair. Like, what does that even have to do with drinks?
I hate that.
It's just, yeah, you know that. Yeah.
The black gay kid doesn't go drink.
Yeah.
I mean, some of them do, but most of us don't.
Yeah.
And I mean, there's just different things that I see classes all the time, and it's like learning experiences filled with people that are just sort of like tattooed post-party age guys that are just sort of holding on to this image. And of course, they're taking craft cocktails seriously at this point, but that still doesn't subtract from how it feels when you're on the outside of this world. It just doesn't seem approachable.
That makes all the sense. It's sort of carrying on that fraternity kind of concept, really. And, you know, I think when you see a lot of the behavior that gets demonstrated in certain circles, there is still maybe some stunted maturity that happens there, right?
Yeah, totally.
I mean, wasn't there one of the bars, big New York bars, recently had some, information come out that they had, like, never hired a woman at their bar?
Yes.
We've talked about that on the show before. We can talk about that. You guys, let's do this. Let's take a quick little break here on the show, and we'll come back, and we can pick that up. And then some of it also was their advertising for how they were trying to hire for their new Singapore location.
Yeah.
That was also particularly part of the issue. Folks, coming back here to the NOLA Drink Show on WGSO 990 AM New Orleans. We'll be right back.
Hi, Jack Jelenko here, local wine guy, suggesting that great handcrafted Pinot Noir from Oregon doesn't need to be expensive. Consider Yamhill Valley Vineyard Estate Pinot Noir from the oldest family estate in the Willamette Valley of Oregon. It's rich, ripe, wonderfully balanced, and it's only about $20 at your favorite New Orleans wine shop. Yamhill Valley Vineyard. Top quality doesn't need to be expensive if you know what to drink. Ask for it wherever you buy wine. Cheers.
Looking to shake things up or find the bartender in you? We mean literally. At the New Orleans Drink Lab, you'll do just that. We teach you the history and tradition of classic New Orleans cocktails. Then you get behind the bar and make them. Master classes are fun, interactive, and hands-on. Great for small groups and team building. Come enjoy the ultimate cocktail experience. You mix, muddle, and master the art of cocktail making. Visit us at 343 Barone Street, or go to our website, drinklabnola.com.
Hi, this is Jeff Craner with the award-winning Nottingham Cellars, located in Livermore Valley, California's oldest wine-growing region, producers of fine wines. Try our clean, crisp 1846 Chardonnay, an ideal pairing with New Orleans seafood, or our bold, rich Petit Sirah, excellent with steak, to our flagship Bordeaux-style blend, Supremacy. You can find our wines in finer restaurants throughout New Orleans. Hope you enjoy our wines.
Did you know that there's a vineyard and winery making quality table wines just 1 hour north of New Orleans? At Pontchartrain Vineyards, we produce award-winning wines from our 15-acre vineyard, as well as premium wine grapes sourced from the West Coast. Try our light, crisp, Louisiana-grown Blanc du Bois, or have a glass of Chardonnay, Zinfandel, or our Cab Syrah blend made right here in Louisiana. There's something for everyone at Pontchartrain Vineyards. For more information, go to pontchartrainvineyards.com.
Tim McNally. Welcome to the Dine, Wine, and Spirit Show, NOLA Drinks Edition. Here's your host, Brian Diaz.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the NOLA Drinks Show here on WGSO. This is Brian Diaz here with you. Happy to be here with you. And we were talking before the break, kind of, you know, a little bit about the cookie cutter image that seems to be out there in a lot of the craft cocktail world specifically. And since we talked about this on a previous show and it's kind of out there, well, you know, we were talking about an establishment in New York that had been accused of never, basically their policy was to only hire male bartenders. And, you know, there's some stuff I think came out after the fact where some of that bartender stuff, perhaps true. I think the GM at the time was a female. So there was some, I think it kind of was maybe something that was somewhat misrepresented, but somewhat true. Mm-hmm. And then part of this was the hiring practices, they were, the way they were advertising in Singapore, that the implication for the ads and the job wanted ads were, you know, guys for bartenders and gals for service industry. And the poster imagery portrayed, you know, an attractive, straight, female Singaporean woman serving cocktails. Now, in their defense, and the bar's employees only, I think we all know who we're talking about here, is that, you know, they said all, you know, I'm just saying this is what their side of the story was, allegedly, that they could not find any female bartenders to hire. But, you know, take that for what it is. But let's use that as a springboard, though. And so we're sort of talking about, you know, and friends, if you want, you can go check out our podcast before, or you can just Google it. You'll find plenty online if you want to hear more about that story. But when we talk about the sort of cookie cutter thing, then when you all, I mean, we haven't really addressed the question to you, Royale, or to you, yeah. Sam. Did you go to try and get a job and find that, you know, you weren't, you know, a white guy hipster with a beard and a vest and a bow tie, and somebody said, no, we can't use you?
Not here, luckily.
Not explicitly.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's what I mean. This could be implicitly or explicitly.
Well, the thing is that no one wants to just come out and say that they're a bigoted homophobe or that they're a racist, you know. Yeah, and in most places, it's not allowed.
Wouldn't that be refreshing? No.
I mean, honestly. Yeah. I don't know if I'd ever call it refreshing, right? But I would prefer it. Yeah. Because the thing is that, like, it's not softer, regardless of what people like to think, is you being, you know, a closeted racist doesn't make you any less of a problem, and it doesn't make navigating, like, your, you know, bias in hiring practices any easier. You know, it's just as hard for people to get a job regardless of whether or not you're open about, you know, those practices or not. So
right,
there are some places in particular that I choose to only work at places that specifically represent themselves as places that are open to hiring women, queers, and people of color, like places that are vocal about being proactive and supportive of marginalized communities on their staff. And so that's how I choose to navigate that. And I'm lucky to work somewhere that actually has a lot of queer black people working there, has a lot of black people that working there, like, just has a lot of, you know, like, weird people around.
Yeah, totally. Ace is full of some weirdos.
Yeah, you know, we're a bunch of freaks and geeks over there. Yeah. And I actually really love it. Like, it's really nerdy, and I like going to work, you know, and I feel like I can be myself. And my managers support the fact that we have the right as people who do a job to tell people if we don't feel comfortable, and to, we're not servants, you know, and I think that people sometimes forget that, like, we're human beings who are doing a job, and we deserve to be respected, and we deserve to be compensated for
it. Well, and you were talking about too, and this is a favorite topic of mine on the show in a very broad sense, is that when we're talking specifically about bartending, and in particular in the craft cocktail world, you're professionals.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I mean, this is, it's a trade, and it's a time-honored trade.
Yeah.
And it should be treated that way. And I mean, I think in New Orleans, in many circles compared to a lot of places, it is understood and perceived that way. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying universally, but I would say it's better than a lot of places where it is, you know, you're sort of the bartender and you're looked down upon.
Right.
But we're also still in Louisiana, and, you know, like, New Orleans as a city is very radical, but we also have a lot of really, really conservative people here. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so, yes, we are professionals and we are respected to a certain extent, like, our title as an umbrella, but when you take that bigot and you put them in circumstances where they might not have expected to see someone that doesn't fit into that cookie cutter model, and then they have to treat you like a professional, and you, on top of it, you're Black and queer or gender nonconforming. That totally, you know, like, busts their nuts. They're not,
that's a great, and Royal, that's a great point, though.
They're not happy about that.
Yeah, but maybe that's a good thing.
Especially if they have to pay you, you know, afterwards. Yeah. Like, that's not.
But, you know, and I mean, maybe, and Sam, if you want to jump in on this, I would argue that that's potentially a good thing. I mean, make people confront this reality, and you've got to at least, for the short time that you're in this establishment, behave like a decent human being.
Yeah, absolutely.
Totally.
Yeah.
I was having a great conversation with a bartender from New York when I was out in Tampa last week. We were talking about talking politics at a bar and how, pre-prohibition, because we were doing a repeal day party, it was a thing that was kind of taverns and bars were the places to go to have these like big discussions and people come together, do like a round table thing. And I think going back to that, having people, we have so many tourists from especially southern states who just aren't used to a very strong queer presence, who are coming into our bars and serving them and just showing them that, you know, their prejudice, it's not really justified in any way. Like, we're people and we're going to show you a good time. We're pouring liquor into cups and giving it to you, and you're going to get drunk and have fun. Deal with it.
This is the end game.
This is the end game. Like, I'm going to treat you nice whether you like it or not, and you're just going to have to deal with it and get over it.
You're going to sit there and like it.
Yeah.
Really Sazerac with a smile on your face.
I know.
And then you're going to give me money.
Enjoy that.
Yeah. And if you don't like it, goodbye.
Right.
I do think that it's a good thing, because you're forcing these people into a situation that they would never like seek out,
right?
And put themselves into,
right.
and you're right. Giving them perspective that they otherwise would not have.
Yep.
And I think there's a lot that we can do with that.
And then maybe when you show, who knows if it's an incremental thing or something, but you show the professionals that you are with the talent that you have on the hospitality side, on the cocktail side, maybe, you know, again, just a good thing to some degree.
I kind of like it. I'm from the South, so I've had a lot of experience with staring bigots in their eyes and proving them wrong.
I went to a Baptist high school.
At least making them think otherwise about how things are in reality. So I have like a sort of nihilistic mentality. I like to burn things down. So if there is like a racist around me, like, if one of my queer friends comes in, I'm going to make sure I kiss them on the lips and like walk around the bar and give them a big old hug.
Yeah.
Anything I can do and still give you great service just to like change your mind a little bit. Like, I'm all about changing minds. I'm trying not to. Yeah, I'm not going to be resistant. I'm just going to sort of let you have all of it.
Yeah, just be yourself, right, and be who you are, and
just let their hate consume them.
Yeah, exactly.
Burst into flames immediately.
Yeah. Well, in that situation, right? Too, it's a situation where if that person chooses to get up and walk out, let them get up and walk out.
Right? Absolutely, that's your right to leave, but it's also my right to be here. And actually, I have to be here, so you can choose whether or not you want to be here.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, that to me is the fundamental point: is that you are here working. This is your job. This is your career. And you don't need to establish anything further than that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's pretty simple and straightforward, really.
Totally.
We all got to eat.
Yeah. Yeah, totally.
And drink.
Well, yeah, there's that part too. Well, y'all, so let's, if we still have a little bit more time here, let's do this. I want to come back to this topic a little bit further. I want to ask y'all a couple more questions, and then we'll finish up with our at the bar segment where we're going to kind of turn back to, we're going to get onto that drink subject.
Cool.
Nothing more, nothing less, just the simple drink subject. Does that sound pretty good, everybody?
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah.
All right,
sounds
great. Thanks, everybody. We're here on the NOLA Drink Show, joined by Sam Perez, Roy Alba, and Johnny Sanders. And we are sitting here actually recording this at Bar Tonique on Rampart Street. And this is Brian Diaz. Come back to the NOLA Drink Show here on WGSO, 990 AM New Orleans. Where bartenders go. All right, we're going to take a break.
The Black Duck Bar is now open on the second floor of Dickie Brennan's Palace Cafe. Named in honor of the famous Black Duck Rum Runner, the bar features an extensive rum collection, also noted for its small plates and charcuterie, the Black Duck Bar is sure to please. Join us for happy hour 4 to 6 p.m. Monday through Friday and try half-price draft beer, wine on tap, or a small plate. Stop by Palace Cafe at 605 Canal Street and try a delicious rum cocktail at the new Black Duck Bar.
Looking for a bottle of wine to impress your friends and family? Miro Cellars from California's Russian River Valley is the perfect wine for any occasion. Miro Cellars searches the region for the finest grapes to make their one-of-a-kind specialty wines. Award-winning winemaker Miro Chelikov considers the particular geology and seasonal climate of each vineyard when selecting the most interesting grapes the region has to offer. Because Miro has complete freedom to make precisely the wines he loves best, the results are spectacular. Let yourself in on one of the best-kept secrets in wine today, Miro Cellars.
Are you looking for a great place to enjoy great handcrafted and vintage cocktails? Victory is located at 339 Barone Street in the heart of downtown New Orleans. We have a variety of spirits, a talented team of bartenders, and great gourmet small plates. Our mission? To preserve an era when cocktails were made with artistry and pride. Grab your friends and come enjoy the ultimate cocktail experience. Give us a call to book your next private event, or go to our website, victorynola.com. See you soon. Cheers.
All right, everybody. Welcome back to the Nola Drinks Show. Brian Diaz here with you and here with Sam Royale and Johnny at Bar Tonique on Rampart Street. We were talking a little bit, we've talked about a lot of different things. One of the things that we were talking about before we went on the air that I wanted to have you guys talk about is that when we had the issue before about gender issues behind the bar, and it was three straight female bartenders, all the good friends of ours, I think, mostly across the board, we talked about how people were treated behind the bar and these sorts of things, and the assumption that because you were a female, you couldn't know as much about the cocktail world or how to make a drink or how whiskey's made or whatever we're talking about here. But I think maybe one thing that perhaps is a little bit different when dealing with the LGBTQ community is, unlike in that situation, you're not going to have a group form or a social media firestorm that says don't go to Barrel Proof because they hire women. That sort of social outcry to ban a place just simply because you're hiring women.
It's funny. Now, I was just at Barrel Proof. There's actually more women.
There you go. I mean, and that's the truth. Yeah. Now, but like recently we know with Target, there was really a significant amount of backlash online, people calling for a ban on Target because Target was being outward, I believe, if I'm correct, on their inclusivity with their hiring practice. Do you guys see that as something that's the case where there is a significant difference there, right?
I think people also were in a tizzy because they said they were going to stop gendering their toy section.
That was it.
Was the uproar. They were like, no, there need to be boys' toys for boys. How are they going to know how to be boys if you don't put labels on it?
Now, isn't that an interesting question?
Well, you know, it's funny because on my way here, I was actually thinking about that because me... I specifically am gender nonconforming, and I see a lot of my customers struggle with that. You know, they're like,
same though,
sir, ma'am. And it's, at that moment, I like to play one player games, and that's like an indicator of a position of power. Like, you know, so it's an opportunity to play a one player game. Is that at that moment I have a choice to either roll with it and just see what happens, or I can react, and then they're obviously going to react back, and that person is almost automatically going to have a bad time, yeah, regardless of however they felt about it, if I correct them. So I often just ignore that happened altogether and just let that person continue to like work it out on their own or figure it out. And it's really interesting to see, you know, people's reactions, and a lot of people aren't introduced in their like circle, you know, social circles, to gender nonconforming or trans people, or if they are, those people might not be out or visible, you know. So It's like we were saying earlier, forcing people to interact with people that they're not normally exposed to, and to maybe deconstruct in their own way their perceptions of gender, when that person would have never been open to someone else, you know, telling
you how to do it,
That gender is a construct.
Yeah, I mean, we all learn by doing, right?
Yeah. And
well, Johnny, do you have any thoughts on that?
I don't think there's that much of discrimination against queers in Louisiana, in New Orleans specifically, sorry.
Yeah, right.
But I think there's also still this separatist vibe in terms of the bar communities here where queers are seeking queer spaces.
Yeah.
More than they are seeking to be included into spaces that are either, you know.
Well, can you elaborate on that? What would be an example, or what do you mean by that?
The fact that all of my friends hang out downstairs at the Phoenix or at the Always Lounge where they can get cheap
drinks.
Queer bars. It's very rare that my friends will come here. And when they do, I'm like so excited. You can't even realize. It's just like I'm freaking out. I'm so happy that even Sam comes in here. I'm like, oh my God. Like,
but I'm always in here, Johnny.
Thank God. Someone. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I would say that most queer people that I know who are into hanging out at bars are very rarely compelled to go hang out at a bar that doesn't have a strong queer presence. And it's like you're saying, it's about seeking safety. You know, like I can't tell you how many times in the past year that I've actually gotten into physical altercations with people because they like disrespect your safety or your space of you and your friends because you're, you know, part of a marginalized community, you know, like when we say there's, you know, like creating safer spaces for ourselves, like sometimes it's a life or death thing for queer people, you know,
especially
like,
when there's alcohol involved.
And
when
there's alcohol involved. Yeah. And I think that a lot of straight people get to live in a bubble where they don't get to think about the fact that our lives are actually on the line every time we leave our house in glitter or hot pants, going to a queer party, having fun, being ourselves. Like, you know, like there are challenges that come with the situation, you know.
Right.
And it's difficult to navigate at times.
Makes sense. Sam, do you have something to add to that?
I mean, I think they both said a lot very well on that point. I've been trying to bring a little more queer community, like because I'm always behind a bar, and when I'm not behind a bar, I'm like on my way home and probably here at Bar Tonique. I miss out on a lot of stuff, and so I've been kind of working, I think, a little more proactively to bring queer community into the spaces that I inhabit most.
Yeah, so you've been organizing things at Catahoula specifically, right?
I've only done one so far. We had a party during Decadence on the rooftop that was a fundraiser for the New Orleans Dyke Bar History Project and their play that they're doing, which is phenomenal, by the way, and you guys should donate to them. They're trying to take it on the road. It's absolutely beautiful.
Will you share that with me so I can share it on the Facebook page?
Yeah, totally. Okay, cool. And we did that, and oh my goodness, that was the most fun I think I may have ever had in my entire life was bartending for that party. It rained, everyone was dancing on the roof and like jumping up and down. It was beautiful.
Awesome.
But I saw a lot of cute makeout sessions and I was like, I facilitated this, I'm proud.
You also created a space for a lesbian community that is so rare.
I know, right? Really true. I know. And so I've been working, Hillary and I, DJ Ruby, who DJed for me there, are talking about doing another one. But I've definitely been trying to work on bringing queer community into these, because I feel like a lot of times what it is we're just kind of given these dingy old dusty spaces to inhabit. Mm-hmm. And I'm trying to bring people more into these, like, you know, places that are both welcoming and not some dirty old hole in the wall.
Some place you might find on the NOLA Eater top 10 places where to drink now list.
I love hanging out at Big Daddy's, but I don't, like, I don't think everyone wants to hang out at Big Daddy's all the time, you know?
Yeah.
So I'm trying to, I think it does well to make other spaces more inclusive as well.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, y'all. So, in the last couple of minutes that we have here on this topic, any last messages? I mean, as far as you know, what I mean, we talked a little bit about maybe it's great that people have to confront this in certain situations, but you know, what are next steps, or what do you want people to know?
I mean, it's funny, like what Sam was saying about, you know, feeling like you facilitated those people having a good time. When I was working at Tivoli and Lee. Kimberly Patton Bragg was the person who was training me. And I was really fortunate to have her as a mentor, because one of the first things that she told me is, like, as a bartender, you really have just two roles, and it's to make sure that people are having fun and getting laid. And so when you're facilitating for the queer community, I think that's really important, because you're providing them spaces mm-hmm. to have those things that to people who might not always get told that they're worthy of that experience. Yeah. You know, like yeah. a lot of times you are struggling to, you know, like I know a lot of people who struggle to eat, you know, like pull food out of the trash can, you know, don't know where they're going to sleep, don't know how they're going to pay for their hormones, you know, like things that are like basic survival that a lot of people overlook, especially people who have the, you know, luxury of having the money to hang out in a bar. So,
right.
you know, being able to like create community for people like myself, I think is really important, and to be a presence and to, you know, like be able to segue other people into good opportunities and places that I'm at who are affirming of my identity, I think is important.
Great. Well, Johnny, real quick, you got something, just like 5-10 seconds?
I love everybody. Yes. Queer people, please come to Bar Tonique. It's so warm and cozy in here. I know that we all love our little safe spaces that have cheap drinks, but we need to enjoy craft quality cocktails as well.
Absolutely. I mean,
the drinks are pretty cheap here,
yeah,
too.
Yeah. During happy hour. Yeah. Folks, come on back to the NOLA Drink Show. We're going to stick around with these three, and we're going to do our At the Bar segment, and we're going to talk about sort of a lighter-hearted stuff. So come on back.
Light-spirited.
This is Christopher Icaza, General Manager of Broussard's Restaurant, 819 Conti Street in the beautiful Vaucaray. We encourage you to come join us this fall and experience the renovation of one of the French Quarter's Grand Dames. Join us in our beautifully renovated Napoleon Dining Room. Come see our friend Paul Gustings at the beautiful Empire Bar. Experience one of the French Quarter's loveliest courtyards. That's Broussard's Restaurant, 819 Conti Street. Open 7 nights a week and every Sunday for brunch.
Hi, this is Jeff Craner with the award-winning Nottingham Cellars, located in Livermore Valley, California's oldest wine-growing region. Producers of fine wines. Try our clean, crisp 1846 Chardonnay, an ideal pairing with New Orleans seafood. Or our bold, rich Petit Sirah, excellent with steak. To our flagship Bordeaux-style blend, Supremacy. You can find our wines in finer restaurants throughout New Orleans. Hope you enjoy our wines.
The French Market is open daily with pop-up fresh markets on Wednesdays and Saturdays. The Crescent City Farmers Market is at the French Market each Wednesday, rain or shine, from 2 to 6 p.m. On Saturdays from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m., find new and different vendors offering everything from fresh bagels to fresh herbs. Vendors change weekly depending on weather and seasons, so check them out often. Visit frenchmarket.org for a list of farmers market vendors, chef demonstrations, live music, and special events.
Are you looking for the best buns? Well, we have them at Bayou Burger in the Quarter. Wait till you bite into one of our acclaimed burgers like the Cowboy Burger, Tiebreaker Shrimp Burger, the world-famous Gator Burger, or you can build your own with endless combinations. It's all fresh meat, never ever frozen. Everywhere you look, there's big screen TVs where you'll never miss a minute of the action. Boasting the largest balcony dining in the French Quarter, you can watch all the action pass you by on the street. Find the best burgers in action at Bayou Burger. 501 Bourbon at St. Louis for the best buns on bourbon. It's Bayou Burger, baby.
Hi, Jack Jelenko here, local wine guy, suggesting that great handcrafted Pinot Noir from Oregon doesn't need to be expensive. Consider Yamhill Valley Vineyard Estate Pinot Noir from the oldest family estate in the Willamette Valley of Oregon. It's rich, ripe, wonderfully balanced, and it's only about $20 at your favorite New Orleans wine shop. Yamhill Valley Vineyard. Top quality doesn't need to be expensive if you know what to drink. Ask for it wherever you buy wine. Cheers.
Hi, this is Kevin Richards with New Orleans' own Sazerac Company, makers of Sazerac Rye Whiskey. In case you haven't noticed, rye whiskey is hot, flying off store shelves and dominating the bar scene in New Orleans and around the country. Rye's spicy and assertive character is drawing in those looking for whiskey with a bite, but that equally pairs well with cocktails. Enjoy it in cocktails like the Old Fashioned or Manhattan, or simply savor it on the rocks. Sazerac Rye Whiskey, the way New Orleans does whiskey.
Hi, I'm Dickie Brennan, and I'd like to invite you to our new Black Duck Bar, located on the second floor of Palace Cafe. Rum is the chosen spirit of Palace Cafe's Black Duck Bar and features an extensive rum collection from all over the world. Be sure to join us for happy hour Monday through Friday, 4 to 6 p.m., with half-price small plates, local draft beer, and tap wine. Look forward to seeing you soon at Palace Cafe's new Black Duck Bar.
Did you know that there's a vineyard and winery making quality table wines just 1 hour north of New Orleans? At Pontchartrain Vineyards, we produce award-winning wines from our 15-acre vineyard, as well as premium wine grapes sourced from the West Coast. Try our light, crisp, Louisiana-grown Blanc du Bois, or have a glass of Chardonnay, Zinfandel, or our Cab Syrah blend made right here in Louisiana. There's something for everyone at Pontchartrain Vineyards. For more information, go to PontchartrainVineyards.com.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the NOLA Drink Show, and thanks, Sam and Royale and Johnny, for being here. And Johnny, thanks for hosting us here at Bar Tonique today.
We love it here.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Yes. It's even for me, who comes here very early, like, you know, noon, 1, 2 o'clock.
Now.
Yeah, now. Yeah. This is early. It's still early for me, even, which is saying something. But so this is our little at-the-bar segment, and just talk a little bit about, you know, bartending stuff. So actually, during the break, we were talking about people coming up and, you know, saying, you know, what do you drink? Well, it's, and I don't want to get too serious or too personal on what that means, but, you know, it's a big world out there, right? So what floats your boat isn't what's going to float my boat, isn't what's going to float your boat.
Absolutely.
So part of the gig, I think, is giving people what they want, as opposed to drinking, you know, well, as you said, Royale, whiskey out of a plastic flask.
Yeah. Well, I feel like that's a very thinly veiled attempt by a lot of people, though, to, like, clock you, you know? Mm-hmm. Like one question, you know, they're trying to gauge, like, what, like, how knowledgeable are you about spirits?
Absolutely.
You know, like, sure. How upper echelon are you? What do you drink?
Yeah.
I feel like
yeah.
it's a very pretentious question to ask.
So do you always answer?
At times.
Fernet.
But sometimes... No, because I only think she drink Fernet sometimes, and it's often when someone else is paying for it.
I'm not saying I don't like it.
No, I love Fernet. I just don't normally buy Fernet, you know? It's not my go-to at the bar. If I'm buying something for myself at another bar, it's probably going to be like a cider, Campari, or like an aged rum.
Okay.
But if I'm like... hanging out, if I go to like the store and buy something, like I'm not going to the wine store most of the time, not gonna go get like a nice spirit bottle, I'm just gonna drink like Evan Williams Black Label or something, you know. Mm-hmm. Something that's like cheap and but like tasty and
solid.
Know. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Something solid.
What about you, Johnny?
Still garbage. shots of whiskey, cheap beers. I love red wines. So I like to fall asleep before 10 p.m.
Something quality on the television.
Yeah, totally.
Right. Then garbage on the television.
in terms of cocktails, yeah, I guess I sort of like simple sort of juice forward, daiquiris. That kind of stuff,
juice
easy.
Forward.
Juice forward. Yeah, statement. Juice forward. Not too much alcohol, actually.
So more vermouth and less spirit?
Yeah, okay. Totally.
All right. What about you, Sam?
Well, my nickname is Sampari. Mm-hmm. and Johnny has served me many a Campari soda. Yeah. You know, it really depends on the day. I was having this conversation with a guest in my bar last night who asked me that very question, what do you like to drink? And I'm like, well, a lot of stuff, actually. Most of the time, if I'm like out at a bar, I'm probably just ordering a beer and maybe a nice whiskey. Mm-hmm. If I'm feeling like I want to get a little tipsy. But actually, last night I was really feeling paper planes for some reason. Mm. I love those.
Oh, they're so delicious.
Describe
that for us.
It's my favorite last word variation. Mm-hmm. It is equal parts Amaro Nonino, Aperol, bourbon, and lemon juice.
Nice.
And shaken, served up, and so delicious.
What's your bourbon of choice in that?
Well.
I thought there was an answer coming. Well, comma.
Well.
No, well. Okay, gotcha.
I've actually been serving that a lot here.
All right.
Well, I mean, you've already got two pretty expensive Amari in there.
Yeah.
Like, so why add more expensive product in it? It's kind of... The bourbon is the backbone, but it doesn't need a shine in it. So you don't need anything crazy in there.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
I've been serving that cocktail quite a lot.
Yeah.
Oh, that's
as far as it's going on the menu soon, but it's not on there yet.
Yeah. And
all right, I'm going to have you make me one today, John.
Oh, absolutely.
All right, cool. We're going to have a round.
Yeah, totally.
Perfect. Well, and Samson, so let's go back to you here in the last few minutes that we have. So you're at Catahoula Hotel,
yes,
which is pretty new, right? Been open
about eight months now. Probably. Okay. We open April 1st, April Fool's Day.
April Fool's Day.
Tricked y'all.
Yeah. Is the joke still going? Or?
Oh, yeah. It's a huge joke. We've been keeping it up quite a while.
Nice. Well, it's a cool place. So you've got kind of a little bit of an emphasis on pisco drinks
and
Peruvian food?
Just a very small emphasis
on
pisco drinks.
I was being somewhat diplomatic.
Yeah,
pisco nerdism.
Yes. Yesterday I was actually wearing my pisco sour hat. Yesterday. I was wearing a pisco sour hat yesterday.
We have the same one in the staff closet at Seaworthy.
Oh my God, I want it. I want two pisco sour hats.
You know, it's like the gold star of the day.
Like, you get to wear the pisco sour hat.
Pisco sour hat.
But at Catahoula, we do huge emphasis on pisco and Peruvian food. We've got, I think the count right now is 30 piscos. I want to say 26 are the ones. We have everyone that is available in the state of Louisiana, and I want to say 6 or 7 that are not, that you can come and ask for. They're a little expensive, but they're all delicious.
All right, I'm going to come find you.
But, yeah, we have an entire pisco cocktail menu. Believe it or not, there's more than just a pisco sour. And we do some really cool, crazy things with a lot of Peruvian ingredients. Peru has some really interesting stuff that you can't get. So we do lots of passion fruit, matcha, yerba mate, that kind of stuff.
Tell people where what's the address?
It is 914 Union Street, just between O'Keefe and Barone. It's very easy to miss.
Awesome. Yeah, there's a little construction, but it's getting better. Cool. Well, Royal, now, so you're at Seaworthy.
Yeah, I'm at Seaworthy at the Ace Hotel. I came onto the Ace staff when they first opened and was up at Alto on the roof for a minute, and then moved over to Seaworthy, where we're focusing on oysters and sustainable seafood, along with a cocktail-centric, you know, drink program. Most of our drinks are based off of classic cocktails and variations from popular cocktail bars around the world of, you know, classics. So we focus more on technique at our bar than we do on, you know, every single bartender having a bunch of personalized specialty drinks.
Okay.
You know, so it's a really good place to come and have, you know, some of the classics and some, you know, like really good popular cocktails executed really well, you know, like.
And where is the hotel?
We're at 600 Carondelet, and you can find Seaworthy at 630 Carondelet.
Okay, great. Excellent. Thank you, Roy. I appreciate it. And Johnny, you're obviously, you're here where you are.
Yes,
right,
I'm
here
at 820 North Rampart Street across from Armstrong Park. We focus on the classics primarily. I don't think there's much deviation from that, but I think it's a great environment to have classic cocktails in. It's sort of a calm atmosphere. It's welcoming.
Calm.
Well,
I guess
it's pretty calm.
That's what
it's
hour calm. You're here?
Yeah. From
this,
only the bartenders make it wild. Really.
P.M. It's calm.
Sometimes it gets weird.
Yeah.
3 a.m. Again, these are all stories I hear, but 3 p.m. I know it's calm.
Yeah. We're not pairing anything with food, unlike these guys, which is. I feel like that adds a whole different element to what you sort of have behind your bar.
Do you guys have any pop-ups here?
Yeah,
there was a lot of pop-ups happening for a while, but they're expecting a child, so they've sort of put it on breaks.
Yeah,
this for now.
All right, well, folks, when you come in here, don't expect food then. Or you can bring food in from the outside, right?
Yeah, I mean,
you
totally.
Guys are pretty kind
dogs
about that.
Dogs are welcome. Food's welcome.
Yeah, awesome.
I love dogs.
Yeah.
Dogs welcome, food welcome. Great. It's a very inclusive place with the food at Bar Tony.
Well, y'all, my dog likes to go out more than I do, and so it's kind of like a must, you know. Sometimes, like, I take my dog to the Poor Boys just because she likes to socialize. And they have a fenced-in yard, so just let her off the leash and go sit at the bar.
See you later, dog.
Well, y'all, find her 2 hours later when she's like done.
Y'all, thanks very much for being here. I appreciate it today.
Thank
after
you.
That little dog anecdote,
yeah.
Royal, thank you very much. We're gonna close out the show. So thanks. Actually, this isn't the end of the show per se, but this is the end of the segment. So Sam, Royal, Johnny, thanks for being here today. I appreciate you
thanks
talking
for
about
having
it.
Us.
Thank you.
We talked about
us.
It was great. And let's have a drink.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
All right, folks, coming back to the NOLA Drink Show.
Oregon wines are taking over New Orleans. The reason? They're delicious. Next time you're shopping for wine, grab a bottle of Sass Wine. Located in the South Salem Hills of Oregon's Willamette Valley, Sass Wine produces small amounts of handcrafted, high-quality wines that include Pinot Noir, Pinot Blanc, Pinot Gris, Chardonnay, Riesling, Sauvignon Blanc, and Rosé of Syrah. A perfect balance of full fruit with fine, supple tannins and firm acidity is what makes truly great wines, and you'll find that in every bottle of Sass Wine you drink.
Springtime in New Orleans is beckoning us back on our front porches, favorite patio bars, and restaurants. Dickie Brennan's Tableau offers some of the best outdoor dining in the French Quarter. Soak in the beautiful weather on the balcony overlooking Jackson Square or by the whispering fountain in the cozy courtyard. Tableau also offers an amazing happy hour from 2 to 6 p.m. every day of the week, offering half-price beer and wine on tap, $5 classic cocktails, and discounted small plates. For menus, reservations, and more, visit TableauFrenchQuarter.com. Tableau is located at 616 St. Peter Street.
Time for lunch? We've got you covered at Sobu.
Chef Juan Carlos whipped up special two-course lunches that start at $14.
Try our Creole Cuban sandwich and pair it with a bowl of our gumbo.
Of course, Sobu's full menu is also available.
And don't forget Sobu's version of Commander's Palace 25-cent martinis.
Available Monday through Friday, 11:30 a.m. to 3:30 p.m.
Join us at Sobu for our speedy lunch at 310 Charter Street in the Quarter.
Complimentary parking next door at the W Hotel.
Sobu, life is meant to be lived, not endured.
All right, everybody. Welcome back to the NOLA Drink Show here on WGSO 990 AM New Orleans. Brian Diaz here with you. Thanks for tuning in today. I hope you found the previous interview interesting, got something from it, maybe a little bit eye-opening for you. I do, once again, appreciate my guests being on the show, Sam Perez, Royale Ba, and Johnny Sanders. Go check them out at their various establishments, Catahoula Hotel, the Seaworthy restaurant there, a seafood restaurant next to the Ace Hotel in the CBD. That's also where the Catahoula Hotel is. And then in the French Quarter on Rampart, Bar Tonique, probably the finest dive craft cocktail bar that you will ever find. So go check out those good folks there. Also, wanted to touch on a little bit of some further drink news in the wine world. You may remember this name, and I always butcher it, but Rudy Kerniawan. Yes, Kerniawan, I believe is how you say it. And that guy, while you may know that name, he got busted for putting a whole lot of counterfeit wine out there into the secondary fine wine market, which means, you know, when folks are out there, collectors are buying it from brokers and that sort of thing. And some of the estimates are that perhaps up to 550 million U.S. worth of wines, counterfeit wines from this guy are floating around in the market. That's a lot, folks. Absolutely amazing. And they're talking about how the value of some of his wines have actually gone, I shouldn't say his wines, but the wines in question have gone up. So for example, they were talking about that in 2002, Kerniawan was selling the 1978 Henri J.R. Richebourg Grand Cru for between $2,000 and $3,000 US per bottle. And that wine today is now worth $10,000. Now, of course, we're talking about the real deal, but this is the problem. Do you know if you got a counterfeit or not? So that's quite remarkable that these wines are actually appreciating, essentially, and it's very difficult to suss out what is fake and what is not fake. There are, of course, professionals that do that, and interestingly, they talk about how only 29% of fine wine producers, I believe we're talking about France specifically, or no, I guess fine wine producers in general, are using any sort of anti-fraud technology in their packaging. I think we're going to see that change more and more. We're talking about maybe perhaps $550 billion of counterfeit wine from this guy, excuse me, being in the marketplace. But the estimate of what is actually counterfeit in the marketplace is actually quite astounding. Some estimates range about $3 billion U.S. maybe circulating here, again, in the secondary fine wine market. They base that on the fact that that market is about $15 billion and that 20% of it or so is estimated to be fake. That is just astounding to me. So anyway, if you're in that market, be careful. I certainly am not. The guy, of course, Rudy Kerniawan, Yawen is he was jailed back in 2012 or 2013, I believe, and spending a good amount of time in prison. I think it was a 10-year sentence, and he had to pay millions of dollars, tens of millions of dollars, actually, in restitution and forfeiture agreements and these sorts of things. And actually, there was a documentary that came out a few months ago in the spring. It's called Sour Grapes. I think it's on Netflix. I haven't had a chance to check it out yet, but I intend to. I've heard good things about it. So if you're interested more in that story about how this guy pulled it off, essentially what he was doing is he was, actually procuring the legitimate wines in question, opening them up in his kitchen, and then dumping youthful wines, younger wines, principally California Cabernet and California Pinot Noir, into the bottles. So it was very much a kitchen operation that he was doing. And what it did generate is, some people making these comments, like opening up a 1945 Mouton and saying, it's surprisingly youthful for its age, or there's an incredibly deep color for the age of this wine, this type of stuff. And so people were astounded by it. And of course, the reason why is because it's got brand spanking new California Cab in it. So there you go. Check out Sour Grapes if you're interested. Also here on a lighter note, 110-year-old Grace Jones, not to be, of course, confused with the singer and model artist there. 110-year-old woman there living in the UK. And what does she credit for her long life and longevity? She has had a shot of Famous Grouse whiskey every night for the past 60 years, ever since she was 50, which is amazing. We're also talking about, we hear these stories that pop up in the article here in the drinks business that talks about Ms. Jones is referring to, some of these past stories that have popped up. A 102-year-old woman who is crediting beer for her long life, a 100-year-old woman who believes that six gin and tonics a day helps keep her young. Wow. 107-year-old Spanish winemaker who put his long life down to 4 bottles of red wine every day. So 100-year-old woman drinking 6 G&Ts a day, 107-year-old Spanish winemaker, 4 bottles of red wine every day. Who are we to argue? They're 100 and 107 years old. Makes me feel like I'm kind of like lagging behind. I think I need to pick up the pace here a little bit if I, want to see a few more years. But Ms. Jones there goes on to say that I never miss my nightcap. All I have is just that whiskey at night. She is a mother of one. She goes on to say that whiskey is very good for you. I started having a nightly tot of it when I turned 50. So I've been having it every night for the last 60 years. And I certainly have no intention of stopping now. Sounds like a good idea to me. My doctor said, quote, keep up with the whiskey, Grace. It's good for your heart. There you go. Doctor says do it. She goes on again to say, I still feel the same as I did when I was 60. I feel fine. I feel full of spirit. She says that she has now received 7 cards, I'm presuming birthday cards, from the Queen. There you go. She said this one this year was particularly a nice one. That sounds very nice. She was born in Liverpool on September 16th, 1906. Folks, that's 5 years after the death of Queen Victoria. Just 5 years. Wow. 1906. She celebrated her birthday at Buckland Manor, which is near her home in Worcestershire, with her 78-year-old daughter. She enjoyed a drinks reception, lunch, and you guessed it, of course, a complimentary glass of whiskey. So there you go, folks. Get that nightly tot in, and you apparently live longer. At least I like to think so. I mentioned, folks, at the top of the show, I kicked off my weekend last night, Wednesday evening, and I was going to tell you a little bit more about that. I wanted to give a special shout out to my good friend, Darren Elisto. Darren, for the past several years, has been working at Sylvain, which is a wonderful gastropub in the French Quarter. If you don't know, you should, right there on Chartist by Jackson Square. It's a very special place to me and my wife. It's a place that we've been going since they opened about 6 or so years ago. Darren has been involved at that restaurant just really not too long after they opened. He wasn't there quite when they opened, but just a handful of 2-3 months maybe or something. And he was behind the bar, and Darren went on to be the bar manager and essentially the beverage director there at Sylvain for the past couple years. And really was helping run the bar with another guy before that. But Darren has done a wonderful job. He is now taking on a new challenge. A good buddy of his is opening a new restaurant in Austin, Texas, that is apparently kind of going to be a high-end waffle house, from what I've been told. Should be pretty interesting. I think it's kind of, they're going to kind of do sort of high-end breakfast stuff, but it'll be kind of chic, and there's going to be a fantastic bar program, which Darren will be responsible for. So Darren is moving to Austin here in just a matter of days. We went to his going-away party at Barrel Proof, which is, of course, part of the restaurant and bar family that Sylvain is a part of the Blanc Smith Restaurant Group. That also includes Mobar on Rampart Street and Cavan Uptown on Magazine Street. And it was good to see Darren and see some of the gang out there. And I wish him well, wish him the best. And I did talk to him a little bit last night. He's going to be our field reporter over there in Austin. So I'm sure we'll have him call in or have him on the show when he comes back in and visits. But once again, Darren, best of luck to you in your new adventure. Folks, I really appreciate you tuning in here today on the show. As always, I invite you to connect with us on social media. Just look for NOLA Drinks on the various platforms. We're on Twitter, we're on Instagram, we're on Facebook, we're on a couple others. And also, please check out our website, noladrinks.com. We'd love to hear from you, especially there on the Facebook page. Comment on the show. Let us know what you think. Let us know maybe some stuff that you'd like to hear us talk about in the future. I would be pleased to take on that challenge if it is possible. You can also, if you're listening to the show on the radio, it's every Thursday from 3 to 5, as you know, because you're listening to the show. That's pretty obvious here on WGSO 990 AM. If you're listening to the radio and you don't know, we do a podcast, which I pretty much mention all the time, and that'll be available tomorrow on Friday, and it's available every Friday from the Thursday show at about noon, and that's available on iTunes, Google Play Music, and TuneIn Radio, and you can find it there through our website on noladrinks.com. You can subscribe to it through those services. You can stream it from our website or those services, and you can also download it and listen to it on the go. All of the back episodes are there for you to peruse. On the website, we always have our show notes. One of the things that I do want to point out, too, whenever we have guests on, like today will be a good example, if you're interested in visiting the establishments that we talk about, whenever that's applicable, I always put a map there on the site, so you can click on the Google map and see where these establishments are. There's a link to their website, so you can go check them out and find out where they are, make it easy for you to find it. So, yeah, please go do check that out. We also have some other stuff going on our YouTube channel, which you can find through the website, some content that's not necessarily part of the show. We do featured cocktail videos and some other fun stuff, things like that. So please check out noladrinks.com. I will be back next week with a new show that's still shaping up. Next couple shows here before Christmas, I'm sure we'll be talking about holiday beverages and food and all of that other good stuff that's going on around town in New Orleans, and things that you might hopefully find interesting. So again, thanks for tuning in here to the NOLA Drinks Show. Brian Diaz here with you. I really appreciate it. Thanks a lot for tuning in, and well, hey, until then, cheers, y'all.